Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling annuities.
Yes, a big topic.
We've gone through a pretty dense document, annuities.pdf, to really pull out the essentials for you. Our mission today, just cut through that complexity. We want you to leave with a solid grasp of what annuities are, how they work.
Exactly. Think of it as your fast track. The source material covers a lot, the basics, the history, especially variable annuities, plus taxes, regulations.
That's a lot to unpack.
It is, but we'll break it down.
Okay, so let's start at the very beginning. In simple terms, what is an annuity?
Right. At its heart, it's a contract. You make it with a life insurance company.
Okay.
You give them money. It grows tax deferred, potentially, and then it can be paid back to you later. The key feature really is the option.
Option being the key word.
Absolutely. It's an option for guaranteed income, maybe for life, or even for both your lives if you have a spouse.
But you mentioned it's optional. The source says many people don't actually take that lifetime income. Why is that?
That's a really interesting point. A lot of people use them more like a savings tool, you know, for that tax-deferred growth.
Ah, so accumulation is the main goal for them.
Often, yes. They might plan on taking lump sums later, not necessarily turning on an income stream. So you need to understand the two phases.
Phases?
Yeah. First is the deferral or accumulation phase. Your money's growing.
Okay.
Second is the annuity or income phase. That's when, if you choose, the payments start coming back to you.
And the document mentions two main types based on these phases.
Correct. Deferred annuities have both phases. You put money in, it grows, then later you decide about income.
And the other.
Immediate annuities. They skip that first phase, you make a lump sum payment, and bam, the income starts pretty much right away.
Okay, let's dig into those immediate annuities first. The source says that's what annuity originally meant.
That's right. Historically, that was the deal. A lump sum to an insurance company.
In exchange for?
A guaranteed series of payments. Could be level, could increase over time. Might be for a set number of years, or crucially, for your lifetime, or even joint lifetimes.
And you mentioned variability earlier. Can immediate annuity payments also change with the market?
Yes, that's the variable immediate annuity. Your payments are linked to how the investments behind it are doing, usually mutual fund type accounts.
Okay, let's talk taxes. When you get those payments from an immediate annuity, how does the IRS see that?
Good question. Each payment is split, essentially. Part of it is considered a return of your own money, your principal.
So not taxed.
Right. The other part is considered income or earnings, and that part is taxed as ordinary income.
How does that compare to, say, taking income from a deferred annuity later?
It's a bit different. With a deferred annuity that's grown tax deferred, your initial cost basis is often lower relative to the total value. So when you annuitize that, a larger chunk of each payment is usually taxable income.
Got it. The source also mentions an annuity with period certain. What's that about?
Yes. That guarantees payments for a fixed number of years, say 10 or 20, regardless of whether you're still alive.
So your estate gets the rest if you pass away early.
Exactly. But it's maybe not ideal for core retirement income, because if you outlive that period, the payments stop.
Right, that makes sense. Which brings us to the life annuity. This sounds more like what people think of for retirement.
Precisely. A life annuity pays for as long as you live. Like a traditional pension, really.
So you give the insurer capital.
And they pay it back over your lifetime, potentially with interest or gains. It's those gains that are taxed.
And how can insurers promise payments for life? That seems risky.
It relies on pooling risk, the law of large numbers. They have actuaries who predict average lifespans for large groups.
So people who don't live as long sort of subsidize those who live longer.
That's the principle, yes. It's longevity insurance. It helps tackle that big retirement worry. Will I outlive my money?
Does it keep up with inflation?
Well, that's a sticking point. The source notes that finding true CPI-indexed life annuities is actually quite difficult in North America. The market is thin.
What if you want income for your spouse, too, after you're gone?
There are options. A common one is a reversionary or survivorship annuity. Payments continue to a beneficiary, usually the spouse, for their life after the first annuitant dies.
Is there a downside?
Yes. The initial payments are typically lower than for a single life annuity. The source even suggests that sometimes taking the higher single life payout and buying separate life insurance might be better financially.
Interesting trade-off. Now, what about that fear of buying a life annuity and then dying soon after? Seems like you'd lose out.
That's a common concern. You can add that period certain feature we just talked about to a life annuity.
So life with period certain.
Exactly. Guarantees payments for, say, the first 10 years. Even if you pass away in year two, your beneficiary gets the remaining 8 years of payments.
But I assume that lowers the payment amount again.
It does. It's always a trade-off. Lower payments for more guarantees. The source mentions a single premium life policy as another alternative way to potentially recoup the initial investment for heirs.
Okay. And, quickly, impaired life annuities.
Right. Those are for people with lower life expectancies due to health issues, like smokers. Because they're expected to receive payments for a shorter time, the insurer can offer them a higher annual payout amount.
Makes sense. And lastly for this section, longevity insurance. How's that different?
Think of it as a deferred immediate annuity almost. You buy it maybe around retirement, but the payments don't start until much later, maybe age 80 or 85.
Why do that?
It's protection against outliving your assets very late in life. Because the payout is deferred so long and there's no benefit if you die before payments start, it's much cheaper than a standard immediate annuity.
Okay, that covers immediate annuities really well. Let's shift to deferred annuities now.
Yeah.
The source says they became more popular in the 70s.
Yes, their main purpose is different. It's about accumulating savings first for distribution later on.
Distribution meaning?
Either taking withdrawals, maybe a lump sum, or potentially buying one of those immediate annuities we just discussed using the accumulated funds.
And the big draw here is the tax treatment during that accumulation phase.
Absolutely. For annuities owned outside retirement plans like IRAs, the key benefit is tax-deferred growth. Your earnings, your interest, it all compounds without being taxed year after year until you take it out.
Like an IRA or 401k in that sense.
Similar concept, yes. Allows your money to potentially grow faster.
Now, within deferred annuities, there are different flavors. Let's start with fixed deferred.
Okay. Fixed deferred annuities offer a guaranteed interest rate for a set period, or sometimes the whole contract term. The source compares them to bank CDs.
But maybe with some differences.
Yes. Often competitive rates, maybe a guaranteed minimum floor. And unlike most CDs, many allow you to withdraw maybe the interest earned or a percentage of your principal each year without penalty, even during the deferral phase. Full access might still be subject to surrender charges, though.
Got it. That leads us to equity-indexed annuities. They sound more complex.
They are a bit of a hybrid. They usually offer a guaranteed minimum return, like a fixed annuity.
Okay, some safety net.
Right. But the potential for higher returns is linked to a stock market index, like the S&P 500.
So you get stock market upside.
Sort of. It's not direct investment. Your return is based on the index, but it's usually limited by things like participation rates.
Meaning you only get a percentage of the index's gain.
Exactly. Or there might be an interest rate cap, a maximum return you can get in a year, no matter how well the index does. Plus, there can be spreads or administrative fees subtracted from the index gain.
And you could still lose money if you cash out early.
Yes, definitely. Surrender charges can apply, especially in the early years. You need to understand how the return is calculated.
How is it calculated? The source mentioned different methods.
Right. The indexing method matters a lot. Could be annual reset, looking at the index change year by year, or point-to-point measuring over the whole contract term, or high watermark, using the highest index value reached on anniversaries. Each has pros and cons.
Lots of fine print there.
You really have to read the contract specifics.
Okay, fixed and equity indexed. Now, the big one, variable annuities. These seem to get a lot of attention and maybe criticism.
They do. With variable annuities, your money goes into separate accounts. Think of these like mutual funds offered within the annuity structure.
So you're invested in stocks, bonds, etc.
Correct. You choose from a menu of options. The big appeal, besides tax deferral, is the potential for higher market-based returns. And you can often put in more money than typical IRA 401k limits allow.
But they often come with guarantees too, right? Minimum returns.
Many do, yes. Things like guaranteed minimum death benefits or income benefits. But, and this is crucial, you pay extra for those guarantees, usually through higher fees.
And because they involve investments, they're regulated differently.
Yes. State insurance departments regulate all annuities. But variable annuities are also regulated by the SEC as securities.
And the salespeople.
They need securities licenses, and sales are overseen by Fine and Rama, which has suitability rules. Advisors are supposed to ensure it's appropriate for your situation.
but the source mentions controversy around suitability and high commissions.
That's a common criticism, because fees can be higher than just buying mutual funds directly, and commissions can be significant. There's concern they might be sold inappropriately sometimes.
The debate being whether the guarantees are worth the extra cost for everyone.
Exactly. Especially for someone with a long time horizon who might be comfortable with market risk anyway, they might be better off with lower cost direct investments.
Okay. Let's talk more about those features and guarantees in deferred annuities. What are the key ones insurers add to make them attractive?
Insurers offer a whole suite of riders and features, often optional, often costing extra. We mentioned death benefits, living benefits.
Living benefits.
Yeah.
Meaning for while you're alive.
Yes. Things like guaranteed income streams later on. There can also be bonus credits up front, account value guarantees, options for a spouse to continue the contract, maybe reduce surrender charges in certain situations like nursing home confinement.
But each feature usually adds cost.
Almost always. Either an explicit fee or built into other charges. Nothing is truly free.
Let's break down the guaranteed minimum death benefits, or GMDBs. What forms do they take?
These protect your beneficiaries if you die during the accumulation phase. The simplest is return of premium. They get back at least what you put in, even if the account value dropped.
Okay.
Then you might have a roll-up. The death benefit grows by a guaranteed percentage each year, say 5%, regardless of market performance. Or a maximum anniversary value, it locks in the highest value reached on contract anniversaries.
And the most comprehensive.
Probably one that offers the greater of the highest anniversary value, or that guaranteed roll-up amount. Obviously, the more generous the guarantee, the higher the risk for the insurer, and usually the higher the cost to you.
Now, guaranteed living benefits, GLBs. These sound crucial for retirement income.
They are very valuable, yes, and often come with significant fees because the policyholder decides when to use them, usually when it's most advantageous for them, which increases the insurer's risk.
Examples.
A guaranteed minimum income benefit, GMA, sets a floor on the income you'll get if you annuitize later. A guaranteed minimum accumulation benefit, GMA, guarantees your account value hits a certain target by a future date.
What about withdrawing money?
That's where the guaranteed minimum withdrawal benefit, GMWB, comes in. It lets you withdraw a certain percentage, maybe 5% of a protected amount each year for life, even if your actual account value drops lower.
So you get income without formally annuitizing right away.
Kind of. There's also a guaranteed for life income benefit, which is similar, but might transition into annuitization eventually. These GLBs are really focused on providing income security during your lifetime, unlike death benefits for your heirs.
Okay, let's pivot to some criticisms and considerations. The commissions paid to advisors selling these seem like a hot topic.
They can be, yes. Deferred annuities are usually sold, not bought directly. The advisor gets a commission from the insurer.
How much are we talking?
The source says typically 1% to 4% of the premium for deferred annuities. Sometimes there are also ongoing trail commissions, maybe 0.25% to 1% annually.
And this creates potential conflicts.
Critics argue yes. A high upfront commission might incentivize recommending an annuity, even if it's not the perfect fit, especially when combined with
those deferred sales charges or surrender charges.
Exactly. Those fees you pay if you take your money out too early. The surrender period can be long, 8 years, sometimes more. Charges start high and decrease over time.
So your money is locked up to some extent.
It is less liquid, for sure. Though the source does mention no-load variable annuities exist.
Meaning no commissions or surrender charges.
Correct. You buy them directly, often from mutual fund companies. But remember, they still have other fees, the M&E charge, fund expenses, administrative fees. They aren't fee-free.
Now, that interesting point about selling annuities inside IRAs or 401ks, Why is that controversial?
Because the IRA or 401k already provides tax deferral. Putting an annuity inside doesn't add any extra tax benefit during accumulation.
So you're paying for annuity features you might get from the IRA itself.
You're potentially paying annuity fees for tax deferral you already have. The main unique benefit the annuity brings inside an IRA is that lifetime income option, or maybe enhanced death benefits.
But didn't we say most people don't annuitize?
Exactly. So if lifetime income isn't your primary goal for that money, you might be better off using lower cost investments directly within the IRA 401k. You could always buy an annuity later at retirement if income becomes the priority.
That's a really key suitability point.
It absolutely is.
Let's get deeper into taxation. We know growth is tax deferred, but what happens at withdrawal time?
Okay, for annuities owned individually outside retirement plans, when you take money out, the earnings portion is taxed.
Is ordinary income. not capital gains.
Correct. Ordinary income rates. If the annuity is inside an IRA or 401k, then generally 100% of the withdrawal is taxed as ordinary income because none of it was taxed going in.
What if I bought an annuity with after-tax money? How do they know what's principal and what's earnings?
Good question. For income payments from non-qualified annuities, they use an exclusion ratio. It calculates what portion of each payment is considered a tax-free return of your original investment, your basis.
So part tax, part not.
Exactly. Until you've received back your entire initial investment tax-free. After that point, 100% of the payments become taxable. So if you put in $100 and expect $200 back over time, roughly half of each payment is tax-free initially.
Have the tax rules changed things for variable annuities versus just holding mutual funds?
Yes, significantly. The 2003 Tax Act lowered rates on long-term capital gains and qualified dividends for direct investments,
which are taxed lower than ordinary income.
Right. So now, since all variable annuity growth comes out taxed as ordinary income, the tax deferral benefit is less compelling for pure accumulation compared to holding funds directly, unless maybe you hold the annuity for a very, very long time. The source suggests maybe over 20 years.
Plus, there's that penalty for early withdrawal.
Yes, the 10% federal tax penalty if you withdraw from a non-qualified annuity before age 59 and a half on top of the ordinary income tax.
The source mentioned an article, Photo Finish, suggesting annuities might not even be great tax deferral tools during accumulation.
It did. That 2003 article argued that for many people, especially considering the potentially higher fees inside annuities and the ordinary income tax treatment on withdrawal, the benefits of tax deferral might actually be outweighed by the costs compared to just investing tax efficiently outside an annuity.
Wow. Okay. A different perspective. What about the insurance company itself? What if it goes bust? Is my annuity protected?
That's a crucial question. Insurers can fail, though it's regulated heavily. But yes, there's a safety net, state guarantee associations.
State-level protection.
Yes. Every state has one. They protect policyholders up to certain limits if an insurer becomes insolvent. The limits vary by state.
Is it like FDIC insurance for banks?
Not exactly. It's not federal government insurance. It's funded by assessments on other insurance companies operating in that state.
So what do they do if a company fails?
They typically try to arrange for a healthy insurer to take over the failed company's policies, or they provide funds to cover claims up to the state limits.
Do all insurers belong?
Generally, yes. They're required to belong to the association in states where they operate. There's a national coordinating body, too, NOLHGA.
Can I easily find out about this protection?
Actually, the source says it can be difficult. There are often strict rules preventing agents and companies from using the guarantee association coverage as a selling point in their advertising.
Interesting. Okay, we touched on advisor pay, but let's recap the specifics.
Sure. For deferred annuities, commissions are typically 1% to 4% upfront. Sometimes there's an option for a lower upfront amount, plus an ongoing trail, maybe 0.25% to 1% per year, based on the account value.
So advisors might choose between higher upfront or upfront plus trails.
Sometimes, yes. Different share classes of variable annuities can also have different commission and fee structures.
And remind us about no-load annuities.
Right. Those variable annuities bought directly, usually from fund companies, no sales commission, no surrender charges. But again, they still have annual M&E fees, fund expenses, etc.
And for fixed and indexed annuities, the commission comes from the insurer, not my principal.
Correct. It's paid by the insurance company from their profits. It doesn't reduce your initial investment amount directly.
But the ethical concern remains high commissions potentially influencing recommendations.
That concern is definitely highlighted. The potential for large payouts can create pressure. The source suggests seeking advice from fee-only planners might provide a more objective perspective.
Okay, let's dive deep specifically into variable annuities now. Key takeaways.
All right, variable annuities. Contracts for payments, now or later, funded by single or multiple payments. Key differentiator, investment options.
The separate accounts acting like mutual funds.
Exactly. Stocks, bonds, money markets. You choose based on your goals and risk tolerance.
So why not just buy the mutual funds directly? What does the annuity wrapper add?
Three main things, according to the source. One, the option for guaranteed lifetime income. Huge for retirement security.
Okay.
Two, a death benefit. Guarantee something for your heirs, often at least your principal back, minus withdrawals.
And three,
tax deferral on the growth. Though, as we discussed, that comes with ordinary income tax on withdrawal.
And definitely for long-term goals, right? Not short-term savings.
Absolutely critical. Surrender charges, the 59 and a half penalty. These are not for money you might need soon. And remember, you bear investment risk. The value can go down.
The source mentioned accumulation and payout phases again for variables. Anything new there?
Just reinforcing that during accumulation, your value fluctuates with your chosen investments. You can usually transfer between funds tax-free within the annuity, maybe with small transfer fees from the insurer. Many also offer a fixed account option with a guaranteed rate.
And the payout phase.
You choose. Lump sum or income stream. That stream can be for a fixed period or for life, and the amount can be fixed or variable depending on ongoing investment performance. Big caveat. Some contracts lock you in once payments start, no more withdrawals.
Let's revisit that death benefit. How does it usually work in practice?
Typically, if you die before annuitizing, your beneficiary gets the greater of the current account value, or a guaranteed minimum. That minimum is often your total premiums paid, less any withdrawals you took.
So some downside protection for heirs.
Yes. If you put in $50,000, took out $5, and the market dropped your value to $40, the death benefit might still pay out $45,000, $50,000, $5,000.
And the stepped-up death benefit.
That's an enhancement. Usually costs extra. It means the guaranteed minimum death benefit can increase over time, maybe locking in the highest account value reached on contract anniversaries. So market gains can increase the guaranteed amount for your heirs.
Are there other optional bells and whistles common in variable annuities?
We mentioned the guaranteed living benefits like GA MIBs. Some also offer long-term care riders, again, for an extra cost that can help pay for a nursing home or home health care if needed.
With all these guarantees, death benefits, income benefits the insurer's financial health seems paramount.
Extremely important. If the insurer has promised to pay out more than the account is worth, you're relying on their ability to make good on that promise. Check their ratings.
Okay, let's tackle the charges. This is where people can get lost. What's the breakdown?
It can be complex. First, surrender charges if you withdraw early.
We covered those. What else?
The mortality and expense, or M&E risk charge, annual fee, percentage of your account value, covers the insurance guarantees like death benefits, lifetime payout options, plus insurer costs, and maybe profit.
Okay.
Administrative fees. Flat fee or percentage, covers record keeping, statements, etc.
And the investments themselves.
Crucially, yes. You pay the expenses of the underlying mutual funds, the subaccounts, just like you would if you owned them directly. These are separate from the annuity fees.
Any others?
Fees for any extra riders you chose, stepped-up death benefit, GMWB, etc., and maybe initial sales loads on older contracts or transfer fees between funds.
Wow, that's a list.
It is. The message is, ask questions, read the prospectus, understand all the fees before you buy.
What about tax-free 10 or 35 exchanges? Sounds technical.
It refers to Section 135 of the tax code. It lets you exchange one annuity for another like-kind annuity without paying taxes on the built-up gains at the time of the exchange.
Why would you do that?
Maybe a new annuity has better features, lower fees, more investment options, or your needs changed.
Any catches?
Yes. You might still owe surrender charges on the old annuity. And the new annuity starts a brand new surrender charge period. Plus, the new one might have higher fees overall, so you need to compare carefully.
Okay. And finally, bonus credits on variable annuities. Sounds like free money.
It sounds appealing. The insurer adds a bonus, say 3% or 5% to your initial premium.
Right.
But insurers usually recoup that cost, maybe through higher M&E charges or longer or higher surrender charges or a specific fee for the bonus. It's rarely free. You need to look at the total long-term cost. A bonus might not be worth it if the ongoing fees are much higher.
This is incredibly helpful. Let's switch gears one last time to the evolution of variable annuities. The source goes way back.
It does, surprisingly. A 1772 reference in the Continental Congress about government salaries. But modern annuities for retirement really started taking shape after Social Security in the late 1930s. Initially fixed annuities to encourage tax-efficient savings.
And the first variable annuity.
That was TIATRF in 1952 for teachers. A big innovation linking benefits to investment performance.
Then came the commercial market.
Yes. John D. Marsh founded VALIC in 1955, leading to the first commercial variable annuity prospectus around 1960. But it wasn't smooth sailing. There were various IRS revenue rulings trying to define how these things worked tax-wise. Issues like owner control over investments, death benefit basis, wrapping other investments.
Then TEFRA in 1982, the start of modern annuities.
That's what the source calls it. TEFRA confirmed tax deferral, but also brought in key rules still largely in effect. LIFO taxation for non-qualified withdrawals, the 59.5 penalty, the exclusion ratio for payouts, losing deferral if pledged as collateral.
And other laws refined things further.
Yes. DEFRA in 84 helped insurers on the tax front. Then the big Tax Reform Act of 86 made annuities look more attractive by reducing tax benefits of many other investments.
Was there any pushback?
Well, TERMA in 88 was anti-abuse legislation. It stopped people from splitting policies just to manipulate the tax rules, treating multiple contracts bought close together as one.
So, after all that, what's the basic framework today?
The source sums it up. Tax deferral for owner and insurer, 59.5 penalty, favorable annuitization tax treatment, exclusion ratio, tax-free internal transfers, and protection from insurers, creditors, and separate accounts. That's the core.
And the products themselves kept changing, too. Death benefits became common.
Exactly. As investors worried about market risk, insurers added death benefit guarantees, first basic return of premium, then more enhanced versions.
Where does the source see the annuity market today? Still strong.
Yes, especially for retirement planning. That combo of tax deferral and potential lifetime income is powerful, particularly for baby boomers facing that triple threat, maybe not enough savings, uncertain healthcare costs, living longer.
Has the focus shifted?
The industry focused heavily on accumulation for a long time. Now there's more innovation happening around the annuitization phase, trying to create income options that offer a better balance of market participation, payment stability, and maybe some liquidity.
And we saw newer designs like no surrender charge, bonus, and equity index annuities emerge.
Right. Reflecting efforts to offer more flexibility, immediate value boosts, or that stock market link with downside protection. The market keeps evolving.
This has been an incredibly thorough deep dive. Let's try and synthesize. Key takeaways for someone listening.
Number one, annuities are complex. Many types, features, costs, tax rules, they are definitely not simple products.
Absolutely. And because of that complexity, there's no single best annuity. It completely depends on your situation, your goals, your risk tolerance.
Right. Which means you absolutely need to ask detailed questions of any advisor. Don't just nod along.
And read the prospectus. I know it's dense, but the details matter.
They really do. Understand the fees, the guarantees, the limitations before you commit.
Okay, finally, a thought to leave everyone with. We've talked about accumulation and annuitization. Given how retirement and markets are changing, how might that balance shift in future annuity designs? What could that mean for people seeking retirement security?
That's a great question to ponder. Will we see even more focus on flexible, secure income generation? Interesting times ahead.
Definitely something to think about. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.